Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Cremery. A power outage hit all of Juneau today just after 11 a.m. Alaska Electric Light and Power, or AELNP, switched on a diesel backup generator about an hour later and restored regular hydropower by 2 p.m. Debbie Driscoll is the vice president of AELNP. She said the outage occurred on a transmission line between the West Terminal near Taku Inlet and the Thane substation. She said staff patrolled the area and couldn't identify the cause, but the transmission line wasn't damaged.
It's possible when we've had situations like that, that a tree branch comes into contact with the line and clears, or wildlife comes in contact with the line and clears the line.
Driscoll says other recent power disruptions are unrelated to Tuesdays. North Douglas has had a string of outages in the past month caused by a squirrel, a tree, and an equipment issue. Driscoll says the power outages are more common in the fall when storms take down trees and hit above-ground transmission lines. And the city clerk's office released another batch of results from Juneau's municipal election Friday and today that include ballots cast on Election Day. The results paint a similar picture compared to the results shared last week. More voters appear to be in favor of Propositions 1 and 2, but oppose Proposition 3. Proposition 1 seeks to cap the rate the city uses to determine how much residents pay in property taxes each year. Yes votes narrowly outpace no votes by less than 150 votes. Proposition 2 would exempt essential food and residential utilities from local sales tax. Nearly 70% of voters are in favor of it passing so far. Proposition 3 would implement a new seasonal sales tax system next year to take advantage of cruise tourists. No votes lead by nearly 1,500 votes. District 2 Assembly candidate Nana Brooks continues to grow his lead over incumbent Wade Bryson for a seat on the Assembly. Brooks now leads by nearly 400 votes. Steve Whitney, Melissa Colum, and Jenny Thomas are now leading the race for the three open seats on the Juneau Board of Education. Thomas surpasses Jeremy J.J.J. Johnson by nearly 115 votes. Write-in candidate and current board president Dee Dee Sorensen continues to trail behind all other candidates. Voter turnout as of Tuesday's results was more than 36%. The results shared are subject to change, and more preliminary results will be shared in the coming weeks. The city will certify results on October 21st. And a former Juneau police officer who slammed a man to the ground during an arrest this summer will not face criminal charges. The state's Office of Special Prosecutions cleared former JPD officer Brandon LeBlanc for his use of force during the arrest. The July incident, which was recorded by a witness, circulated widely online and prompted a public outcry. The man arrested during the incident, whose family has publicly identified him as Christopher Williams Jr., appeared to lie unconscious for the remainder of the video. He was later medevaced out of town. Tuesday's statement from the Office of Special Prosecutions says that after a review of the evidence and independent investigation conducted by Alaska State Troopers, Alaska Bureau of Investigation, the office determined, quote, it would not criminally charge Officer LeBlanc for the incident. Following the arrest, LeBlanc was placed on administrative leave. He later resigned from his position just a day before JPD released the body-worn camera footage of the arrest. Since then, Chief of Police Derek Boss says the department is taking action to reform its policies after conducting an internal investigation. He defended the department's hiring of LeBlanc during a presentation to the Juneau Assembly in late September, saying he firmly believes that LeBlanc is, quote, a good officer who made a very bad mistake. And at least three people are still missing and 51 have been rescued following a record-breaking storm that slammed into the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta Sunday. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, officials say search and rescue efforts are ongoing.
Coast Guard Commander for Western Alaska Christopher Culpepper compares the devastation in southwest Alaska villages to the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina.
Several of these villages have been completely devastated, absolutely flooded, several feet deep. And so this took homes off of foundations. This took people into peril where folks were swimming, floating, trying to find debris to hold on to in the cover of darkness at nighttime.
Culpepper spoke alongside numerous officials at a news conference on Monday, a day after the remnants of Typhoon Halong barreled into remote coastal communities in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. The storm hit the villages of Kipnuk and Quigilinguk especially hard. The storm brought winds of over 100 miles per hour and record floodwaters. Helicopters, planes, drones, ships, and pararescuers from the Coast Guard, National Guard, and other agencies worked through the night and are still searching for three people missing from Quigilinguk. Hundreds of survivors are in communities shelters. Mark Roberts, head of the State Emergency Operations Center, says locating every missing person is a top priority. He says officials continue to take stock of the extensive damage. The storm destroyed dozens of homes. Some of them floated off their foundations with families still inside. Several used cell phones to call for help.
It's been very scary. Very, very scary for folks. Let me tell you, the folks that were in houses that were floating and didn't know where they were was one of the most tragic things our folks in the state AOC has ever faced.
The storm cracked the runway at the airport in Kipnuk, preventing planes from landing. It snapped utility poles in half, leading to power outages. Alaska National Guard head Torrance Sack says he's activated every member of the state's National Guard and Alaska State Defense Force living in western Alaska. He says that's about 60 to 80 people, and more are set to join.
This may end up being the largest off-the-road system response for the National Guard in about 45 years.
Meteorologist David Kramer with the National Weather Service says in Kipnuk, the water reached 6.6 feet above the normal highest tide mark.
Previous record was 4.7 feet, and that was back in 2000. So almost 2 feet higher than what we have seen before for Kipnuk. Quite a big difference.
The search at Quigulangoc also broke a record high set last year. In addition to its search and rescue mission, the Coast Guard is also focused on a potential marine disaster. By midday, the only pollution reported was a light sheen in the floodwaters, but the damaged area includes dozens of bulk fuel tanks and other fuel storage facilities. Here's Culpepper with the Coast Guard.
These facilities are those that which the communities rely upon for home heating oil, subsistence through winter, for travel, for fuel, for vehicles, boats, aircraft, and their critical assets.
But for now, Governor Mike Dunleavy says spilled oil is a lower priority than search and rescue and recovery.
We got to take care of people quickly. We have to take care of their needs quickly. We have to take care of water, food, sanitation, electricity.
State officials say dozens of nonprofit organizations, businesses, and faith-based groups are also coordinating recovery efforts with the state. Dunleavy has declared a disaster for the region, easing access to additional resources.
We know you need help. We're going to continue to get the help to you. We're going to do everything we can to get everything up and running as quickly as possible. And we will continue to help, not just today, tomorrow, but weeks and months on, and until we get things back to what used to be at least considered semi-normal.
Dunleavy and members of Alaska's congressional delegation say they plan to visit the region as soon as later this week. With additional reporting from Liz Ruskin, reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
The Norwegian Encore departs Juneau tonight. It's the last cruise ship of 2025, and it marks the end of a nearly 200-day tourism season. This year's cruise season kicked off amid a lot of uncertainty. It began as the Trump administration's tariffs shook the global economy, and dozens of residents in Juneau lost their jobs in waves of federal firings, leaving the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center with reduced staffing. The glacier is Juneau's most popular tourist attraction, drawing more than a million people last year. But Juneau's tourism director, Alex Pierce, says other organizations stepped up to help U.S. Forest Service staff keep visitors safe this summer.
The situation at the glacier out there was really a testament to community collaboration and also how important that asset is to our community.
The final tally of passengers who stepped off cruise ships into Juneau this year hasn't been released yet. But Pierce says it's expected to be between 1.6 and 1.7 million. Next year will be about the same, she says, but new measures are going into place to curb future growth. The 2026 season will be the first time that the city's negotiated daily cap on passengers is in place. That will limit cruise ship visitors to 16,000 people on most days and 12,000 people on Saturdays. Right now, Juneau sees up to 21,000 visitors on the busiest days. Cruise ship companies also agreed to shorten Juneau's season to exclude most of April and October. Pierce says the conversation on how to best manage cruise ship tourism in Juneau is far from over.
I think not having to brace for year-over-year growth and kind of understanding what the season's going to look like as we go into it has been helpful.
The first ship of the 2026 season is slated to arrive on April 27th, and the last is scheduled on October 6th. And in a ceremony held on Indigenous Peoples Day yesterday, clan leaders and carvers dedicated the latest pole in Sealaska Heritage Institute's Kutia Dayi, Juneau's totem pole trail. Inside the clan house in the Walter Soboleff building, Suktinady clan members stand in front of a large poster depicting a totem pole that represents their clan history. They offer thanks to other clans, carvers, and SHI leadership. The actual pole, called a Kutia in Tlingit, was raised near Juneau's Overstreet Park, but organizers held the dedication inside due to weather. Edward Thomas is Suktinady, and he says he's excited to see his clan join the handful of others already represented by the Kutia Dayi.
As I look at the walk of the totem pole along the waterfront here, I'm proud to see that all of our clans are being represented.
Thomas went on to thank the carver, Lee Wallace, and his apprentices for the thought and work they put into the pole. Wallace is a Haida master carver and lives in Saxman. But he says this cutia is a part of his family's legacy, too.
My great-grandfather has a totem pole in the state building, Dwight Wallace. My grandfather, John Wallace, has a totem pole that was outside the city museum. So now with this particular cutia pole, there's three generations of Wallace totem poles standing here in Juneau.
Wallace was helped by apprentices, including his son, Charles Peel. And Peel holds the youngest member of the carving team, his five-year-old daughter, Dodd Senga Elizabeth, as he describes the design of the pole.
And at the top, we have the current clan leaders. We want to acknowledge that this is the representation of a living people, that this isn't just something that's from the past. This is something that's tying history together. We often look at totem poles as things that are coming back from the past, and we wanted to add a piece that represents the present.
Below the current clan leaders, the pole features a spirit man, raven, and a box that represents the abundance of knowledge and history held in the Sukhtanedi clan, whose homelands are near Cake. At the base is the clan crest, dog salmon swimming in tall grasses. The National Park Service funded this pole. SHI plans to raise a total of 30 poles along Juneau's waterfront. So far, 13 poles have been installed. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 50 degrees and raining this afternoon. We're expecting some more rain tonight, and it might taper off a little bit tomorrow. But by tomorrow night, it should pick up again, and it looks like we'll have rain the rest of the week with temperatures in the low to high 40s. And sun sets a little bit before 6 p.m. tonight, and it will rise a little bit after 7:30 tomorrow morning. You're listening to KTOO. Thank you for tuning in.